And I pause with them in a conversation and I just like go, holy smokes, man, it sounds like you got a lot going on. And just to even have that pause, like in a conversation, I think is really valuable.
Hey everyone, it's Ryan here with Cardinal Aviation. Welcome to episode number 40 of the Cardinal Aviation Audio Briefings. Thank you very much for joining us. We're really happy to have you here. Today we are going to change gears a little bit. And in the past we've talked about tips on operating the airplane, how to take care of the airplane, how to take care of all the things that surround flying. But what we haven't talked about is probably the most important thing, and that is how to take care of yourself. Up until recently, mental health in aviation is something that hasn't been talked about. It's something that has been avoided because, you know, pilots are supposed to be bulletproof. We're supposed to be tough. There's no room for feelings in the cockpit. And for many people, the challenges that are going on in their everyday lives tend to get put on the shelf so that they can do what they are supposed to do and focus on flying the airplane. But can we really focus on flying the airplane if we haven't first looked after our own house? Instead of leaving our baggage at the door, maybe unpacking that baggage and taking inventory of what are in those suitcases and if we have adequately dealt with the things that we have been carrying around that may be adversely affecting our flying, or if our flying has been adversely affecting our life and our health. And when it comes to flying, there are certain words that we don't hear very often, and words like emotional and coping and awareness and feeling. Those are words that we don't often hear come out of a pilot's mouth, and it's something we tend to avoid talking about until today. And with that in mind, I am really privileged today to be joined by Gord Stevens. And Gord is somebody that I flew with early in my career. He was one of my training captains, had a huge impact on, one, my flying, but two, how I look at things, how I interact with things. And Gord has been on a journey of his own, and it's been about balancing life and balancing flying and having to deal with things when that balance is upset. And Gord now flies for a major airline, but is taking some time now to reflect on the journey that he has been on, the path that he has walked, and really wants to share those lessons that he learned with other aviators, with other professionals, in hopes that they can try and find some balance between their work life, their personal life, because all these things are interconnected. So Gord and Amber have been running a series of workshops, and the next one is called A Path Towards Stability. It's an 8-week course for pilots, and I'll just read it straight from the text on the course here. It says, "Together we will explore mindfulness and social and emotional intelligence strategies to support a greater sense of balance." And this is an 8-week online kind of seminar series with Gord. And the most amazing part of it is that it is free. And that doesn't surprise me, knowing Gord. I mean, Gord truly does this because he has learned these lessons, oftentimes the difficult way, and really wants to see his colleagues and fellow aviators be able to find their balance. And just like we learn from one another in our flying, and you know, oh, I wouldn't do that again, or I wish I may have done that a little bit differently, the same goes when we're talking about mental health, about life balance. Why make the mistakes over and over and over when we can learn from one another, when we can reflect a little bit and make some small changes early on just to really smooth out how we go about things. Now, I hadn't really planned to do an interview with Gord, but he and I were going to have a telephone call this morning, just catch up. It had been a while. And I know that every time I talk to him on the phone, it is always an enlightening time. Time usually gets lost. I usually learn something. There's some sharing that happens. So I did ask him early in our phone call if he would mind if we just reset this and actually recorded the conversation, because I felt like what Gord has to share could have such a massive impact on so many people and our listeners. So without any further delay, here's my conversation with Gord. Sports here. Hi, Gord.
Hey, Ryan. Happy to be here, man.
Thanks, dude. So I always kind of start out with how we know each other. So you and I work together at Ken Borick Air in the Maldives, which is one of those places you either love it or you hate it. I was, it wasn't my favorite place. It was paradise at the beginning. And then, the island started feeling smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
What was it for you?
Yeah, I can relate to that. At that point, I remember when you showed up, actually. I remember that very well. That was right when it was still very novel for me living there. And it was, I had no idea. I was very, as I term it now, I was very emotionally unaware. So I was having a great time, you know, flying. I love Twin Otters. That airplane is pretty much the reason I got into flying in at all. And so, you know, flying around Twin Otters and, making an art of flying in 25 knots on the ocean. It took a lot of my emotional capacity, all of my emotional capacity at the time. And I wasn't aware of how stressful it was living in, as you termed it, you know, a smaller and smaller place. I just allowed myself to be really swept up by the operation of the airplanes.
I remember being there, and I think I was that person as well, where I showed up and I was like, wow, this is paradise. Sign me up for another 3 months on top of my commitment. And everyone's like, whoa, hold your horses. See what you have to say, you know, 3 months from now. And then I remember being like 6 months in and, into my sentence. I mean, sorry, 6 months into my time there. And it's a new batch of pilots showed up. And again, they're like on day three and they're like, this is amazing. Sign me up for another 6 months. And then I kind of was that person. I was like, hey, hold your horses. Just see how you like it. But, you know, you got guys like Dave Woolham, who I think are still there.
That's right.
Mali, I think it's a really good example. Like you talked about when I first showed up, it was when I got to Mali that I realized how socially retarded I was in a lot of respects. or how like aviation like is just so different. I remember showing up, it was like day two, and who was it? It was like Dirk, and there's Fabio and yeah. Terry and all these guys, and we were at the hotel pool bar, and back then in Mali that was the only place where you could go have a drink because it's for religious reasons and local custom and law. But I remember being around the pool and I'm still trying to like figure everything out. And Dirk walks up behind Fabio and like smacks his ass. He's like, Fabio. And then like Fabio like smacks Terry's ass. And was like, Terry. And is like, I guess this is what we do here. And I think I'm an idiot. I think I did it. And they're just like, what the hell are you doing? And like, what I didn't realize is these guys have been working together for like 10 years, right? Like there's a rapport there, right? Like you work your way up to something like that. And then I got that nickname OTT, which no one explained to me until the end, which was over the top. And I think I got that on night one for just joining the ass smacking party, but
that might've been where that came from. Yeah,
I think so. Anyway, what was it like there? I mean, for you, been like the dynamic of just people and yeah.
I think you and I might have walked over to that pool bar together that night, because I sort of remember that.
Well, you're a training captain, so you might have been like the first person I flew with there.
That's right. Yeah. I think I did your initial indoc there. But that dynamic that you talk about at that pool that day, that night, was is really a function of coping, right? Like, you know, people, like you said, having rapport together, literally working together, living together, playing together every day, every single day, working, living, doing everything alongside each other and with each other. There's nobody else there. In that community of pilots in Mali at that time, and probably still now, I don't know for sure, but, you know, very isolated from the rest of life. And for me, you know, witnessing or being a part of that rapport, or just taking that for granted, is kind of like turning my back to something. It's like it's like encouraging unawareness, which is totally the, I grew increasingly uncomfortable with the idea of that, of what I, you know, just this feeling of unsettledness. Like, do I want this every day for the forever? And, you know, my answer slowly became clearer to be, no, I don't want this forever. Well, why not? What's going on? What am I uncomfortable with? It wasn't, you know, the idea of watching somebody like you be sort of ostracized for trying
too hard to fit in.
trying too hard, but trying too hard to fit into what? It was you were trying to fit into something that you didn't even realize was like this coping mechanism. You know, it was an unsustainable life the way, in my opinion, I was living my life there. Certainly unsustainable for my level of emotional awareness with my family. Like, there's a great reason that I had family relationships, friend relationships fall apart while I was living that life. It's because I wasn't, because it can be very demanding for somebody who's not very aware of their level of emotional load. Or, you know, for example, both my grandmothers died while I was there, while I was in Mali. And it's really easy to go to that pool bar and drink and high five or slap somebody's ass, right? Like, you know, it's much easier to do that than to buy myself a $2,500 ticket to fly back to Canada and go to a funeral. It's a lot easier to go to that pool bar. And so that's what I would do.
Yeah.
I'd, you know, go kite surfing, go surfing, go out, you know, work 13-hour days, sun up to sundown. And then on day six, wake up at sun up and go surfing and drink beer,
which sounds to the outsider to be amazing and like the best gig anybody could ever ask for. But, and a lot of people ask me like, oh, it must've been amazing. I was like, you know what? It was a really cool experience. I wouldn't trade the experience, but it, you know, it changes everybody one way or the other, but you talk about like awareness and emotional awareness. And that is not, those are not two words you typically hear come out of a pilot's mouth. So we didn't really talk about where you are now. I mean, you're a captain at a major airline, and you have started something on your own, which I want you to explain because I can't do it justice. But as pilots, you know, we have this expectation that has kind of been bred into us of you know, machoism, invincibility to a point, like we're made out of Teflon. And I'm guilty of that. I'm not a feelings person at all. I'm very, very matter of fact, very, very linear. Here's a problem. Let's find a solution. And I think you're probably one of the only, and it started in Mali. Like, we'd have an overnight at, you know, one of the hotels. And I remember sitting, like, these are memory, like it speaks to you as a person as well. Cause these are things that there's a lot I don't remember there, but one of my memories there was like, I always look forward to flying with you because I knew when we were done for the day, we'd grab a drink, we'd end up sitting by a pool somewhere and just talking. And it was actually like a meaningful conversation about something that mattered, and usually a conversation that took me out of my comfort zone a little bit because it involved, I don't know, something beyond what was right in front of you, or, hey, you know, look at that over there, what do you think about that, or about the day's flying. It was about life, about what's going on in your brain and feelings and whatnot. And you're probably the first person that was ever able to kind of pull that out of me. And you've kind of taken that to the next level, but do you want to just maybe talk about that and where that comes from?
Yeah, I can do that. It's good. I like the genuineness of this, because I don't have anything planned or rehearsed to answer that question. But the day in and day out of operating the airplanes, in not just in Mali but anywhere, on, you know, twin otters, single otters, on floats and skis. If you want to, for me, in my experience, I wanted to do things better and better every day. Whether I landed at a place for the 10th time one day, or whether I was going someplace for the first time ever with no support, both of those scenarios would happen lots, as you know, in twin otter, single otter world. And to do that every day and get better and better at it takes the same kind of, it's sort of, to me, I started to realize it was the same And as the years go on, I realize it more. It was a very similar coping mechanism to that pool bar in Mali. It was easy for me to sort of turn away from, for example, my two grandmothers dying, to turn away from the scope of that, of what was going on for me when that happened. You know, I made the conscious decision to not fly back to Canada when both of my grandmothers died. Less conscious was how much my family needed support, not just me, right? So I stayed in Mali and flew my ass off, you know, with you and with all those other guys. And I would look forward to those to the after flying conversations with you too, Ryan, because I didn't know it at the time, but because it took me out of that coping stuff, out of that pool bar routine, that surfing boat routine, that drinking routine, you know, to sit and have a conversation with you, because it was rare for me as well. I didn't really, you know, it was not my everyday experience, and that is what it took me out of that unconscious coping. You see what I mean by that? I was unconscious that I was coping. I was like ignoring or turning away from my level of emotional load, what was going on in my life, like not being there for my family, not knowing how to be there for myself. And I would do that every day by flying all day better and better and better. You know,
it's like what I'm hearing is it's almost like a substance abuse situation where there are people who have stressors introduced to their life and they may cope with alcohol or drugs or some other substance, and we cope with just focusing on flying.
Yeah, I agree with that very much. I think in my experience, substance abuse, or, you know, turning to substance is a symptom, or it, for me it is anyways, it's a symptom of, and it's something that I am much more aware of in my life, is why do I want to do that? You know, it's, and the answer, again, as I look back on as I reflect on my experiences, the answer to me is more and more, it is that I'm turning my back on dealing, you know, on digesting, on processing. And I was really hard on myself about in the following years, I really beat myself up about not flying back to Canada for those funerals and friends' weddings, everything. Like I was just, you know, it was much easier just to fly my ass off and go to that pool bar, right? To get back to your question, there were a lot of things that I would torture myself about emotionally over the years, including those things, and my daughter was in Canada, not seeing my daughter, basically being a completely absent parent, and flying instead, basically being a completely absent family member and flying instead. Man, I got really good at flying airplanes. I got a ridiculous amount of flying hours, Ryan, for a guy that's 42 years old this year. Yeah. It's crazy. And the reason is because I would fly instead of really pay attention to what was going on for me. And it ended up culminating in really unhealthy relationships for me, unhealthy relationships with myself. When I looked at things like substance abuse, unhealthy relationships in my family, in my friendships, quote unquote friendships, I've redefined that, unhealthy relationships with my wife, who I ended up getting divorced with actually twice, like traumatic separations. And when I looked at this and I looked at the people I was flying with a few years ago, who I'm sitting beside every day in the flight deck, having conversations, you know, conversations sort of drift in this direction. And I said to myself, man, if I would have put my hand up earlier, I might have been able to save myself some of this like emotional trauma over the years as I'm flying around. I just said to myself, I wonder if I can help even one person avoid this kind of like emotional breakdown mode, like trauma, emotional trauma, whether it's maybe I help somebody recognize in their own life their level of emotional load, whether like I started to see people going through training programs and moving and getting a divorce and, you know, going through like child custody battles and wondering, you know, telling me that they're not sleeping very well. And I was like, well, yeah, you're not sleeping very well. Listen to yourself. Like, my goodness, man. And so I would end up having these, like, hearing people talk like this, and it was like listening to myself over the years. And so I would end up having these, like, hearing people talk like this, and it was like listening to myself over the years. Like,
I feel like, what do you think it is about you that allows people to open up about those things? Because I'd imagine that these are things that people don't, you know, wear on their sleeve, that don't have tattooed to their forehead, as conversation starters. But I mean, like we talked about, you know, by the pool in Mali there, you are the kind of person that invites people to go probably a little bit deeper than they normally would. Like, why is that? Is it vulnerability? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess some of it is vulnerability. It's funny you bring that word up, because it's a theme of one of my sessions in my course. Is a new theme I was looking at just this morning, is vulnerability. It's going to be a great one, by the way. But as I pause here, I realize the value of a pause. And I think that's something I speak to as well with people. Like, I'm not a counselor, I'm not a therapist, but I am a fellow pilot. I'm a fellow human. And when I'm sitting beside somebody, whether it's in a flight deck or wherever, you know, looking over a flight plan or looking at weather or whatever, like, and you know, conversation comes up about whether it's how the person's having trouble sleeping or what they're going through in their life, AKA moving, divorce, family member dying, family member sick, whatever. And I pause with them in a conversation, and I just like go, holy smokes, man, there sounds like you got a lot going on. And just to even have that pause, like in a conversation, I think is really valuable. In my experience, it's been really valuable. And when somebody paused with me in my past and said to me, man, that you got a lot going on right now. And I would pause and look at what I just said and be like, okay.
See, that's, I mean, I just learned something there, because I don't know, I'm guilty of, I don't deal well with other people's problems. I'm kind of like, you do you, I'll do me. And while I feel empathy, I don't show it very well. I'm horrible at it. And so if somebody were to say that to me, up until you just said what you said, I've got this going on, I'm not sleeping, and you know, my, you know, wife just left, and you know, my kids, you know, just, I just found out one of my kids is sick and it's affecting my sleep and I can't focus on my flying. I tend to duck and run from those conversations. And so I usually end it real quick. I'll be like, oh man, that sucks. Which isn't helpful. Like, it doesn't, it's not an opener. It's not a pause. It doesn't encourage conversation. It's just kind of like, yeah, I heard you and that sucks. But it's not, that sucks is not helpful. You saying something like, man, it sounds like you got a lot going on right now. It's an acknowledgement at least, right? And kind of is an opener to probably a deeper conversation.
Yeah, I guess it is, now that you mention it. I mean, recognizing that sucks isn't helpful is, I mean, you're right, Ryan. You're right that I think I agree with you that you do feel empathy for people. I think you're a little bit wrong in that I don't think you always say that sucks. I mean, in my experience, you and I would have those conversations, both because you can relate. And I remember holding conversations about that. I think you're being a little hard on yourself with that, but it's much easier to be matter of fact, to use your words. It's much easier to be matter of fact and linear, right? Our brains really want to be black and white.
So there was a big dramatic click, and that was not intentional. Unfortunately, our call was interrupted, and Gord had some stuff he had to go do. I had some stuff I had to go do, but this conversation is so important that we picked it up a few days later, and we're actually going to make that into a part two. And the reason why it's going to be a part two is because this is such an important subject matter. We're going to pick it up talking about vulnerability, why we hide our vulnerabilities, and things that we can do to address those things, to be more aware, more mindful in the cockpit and in life. So check out part two of this conversation, which I'm publishing at exactly the same time, so that if you want, you can come back and listen to it later, or you can go straight into it right now. So this is episode 40. Part two is going to be episode 41. We're doing a two-for-one, releasing both at the same time. This is all part of kind of the ongoing learning, the ongoing conversation, and we really appreciate you for giving us space and for joining us to listen to these conversations, because they are so important. I also want to say a huge thank you to Gord for making the time to do this, for being vulnerable, for putting himself out there, for sharing some very personal stories and experiences so that other pilots and our listeners can relate and can learn from the path that Gord has walked in his career. Before you go, make sure that you subscribe to this podcast on Apple, iTunes, on Spotify. Check out our podcast page, cardinalaviation.ca/podcast. While you're on the Cardinal page, check out the services that we provide, learn about our coaches, reach out to us, tell us how we can help you. If you feel so inclined, go ahead and click on the Support the Podcast page. You can buy us a coffee. You can become an annual supporter. In the next episode, we'll give a shout out to some of the people who have signed up to become supporters. And we also have some wicked Cardinal Aviation gear, some hoodies, hats, t-shirts, stickers, decals, all that good stuff on the website. We want to hear your feedback. info@cardinalaviation.ca. Let us know what you think. Let us know how this conversation that Gord and I just had has impacted you, or if you can relate to some of the challenges of finding balance between flying and life, and if you're a live to fly or a fly to live, or if it's maybe a little bit of both. We just want to hear from you. All right, everyone, that's it for today. And as I always say, fly safely, never stop learning. And from this day forward, I'm adding a third one. It's going to be take care of yourself.